You're listening to a 95 BFM podcast.
So I said, well, it's no use frightening ourselves into it. We must take every precaution and hope for the best. I used to disinfect the drains well, and we gargled with a weak solution of Condis fluid every day. Tom used to spray the cars with formalin after taking patients to the hospital. It spread so fast that they had to put up a marquee to take the overflow of patients.
Here is a short history of how people lived through pandemics and epidemics in New Zealand's past. That was a town hall custodian's wife speaking about the 1918 influenza pandemic as it reached New Zealand's shores. The year was 1913, and Mormon missionary Richard Shumway travelled from Vancouver to Auckland to attend a hui with Māori from around the country. He believed he had measles, but in fact had smallpox, a disease which was, at the time, incurable. By the end of the year, 55 New Zealanders were killed by smallpox, all of them Māori. With the newspapers painting the disease as a Māori disease, politicians and public health officials used this misinformation to place harsh restrictions on Māori. Yellow flags were raised over Kāinga wherever a Māori fell ill. Māori in these areas were essentially barred from travelling unless they carried a certificate, and even then, public health officials would not take the certificate seriously. Ad hoc Pākehā militias stood by in some areas to enforce restrictions. Similar things were happening to Indigenous peoples across the British Empire. The year was 1918, and armistice was called to signal the end of World War II. But most New Zealanders, especially in rural communities, were thinking not so much of a war overseas and more so about the issue at home. The influenza.
In the midst of all this horror came the armistice, November 11, 1918. I recall the nearby church bell ringing and my father telling me the war was over. I was only vaguely interested. He told me that Bert, my brother, had died. I took as much interest.
That was the son of Reverend James McCaw of Lower Hutt. Caught up in the chaos of wartime, the New Zealand government couldn't react fast enough to the disease. In 2 months, New Zealand lost 9,000, about half as many people, to the influenza as it had in the whole of the First World War. No event has killed so many New Zealanders in such a short time. Central committees were established to coordinate relief efforts, and areas were divided into blocks or districts, each with its own depot or bureau. Not unlike today, many public facilities and businesses closed, and public events and gatherings were postponed. With the medical workforce already stretched due to the war, volunteers had to fill in the gaps, whether in their own household or in their local community.
And if anybody came into the hospital when we were desperate, they could even take a temperature or make a bed or a pulse or had any idea of nursing, we fell on their necks almost with gratitude because we didn't have to show them around, you see. We just said, get to it and look after them, you see. So ever since then, I worked a good deal in the Red Cross, you see, in Hastings and Havelock. And my great idea is to get every girl trained that I could in this course of home nursing. We'll have epidemics again, we'll have emergencies again, probably.
That was a nurse from Hastings. Today there remains living survivors of the polio outbreaks in the 1950s. With school closures and public gatherings banned, my grandfather remembers it as the summer that never ended. Children completed school lessons by correspondence by listening to broadcasts on the radio. The polio mainly harmed children, with many permanently affected afterwards. Here is a recording from a hospital in New Zealand. Please keep in mind that the language used here is not language we would use today.
Shortwave therapy and other up-to-date techniques have made recoveries speedier and more certain. But the cripples have also to be taught, or retaught, such everyday actions as lifting, holding, and walking. Until full confidence and efficiency have been attained, the cure is incomplete. All types of cripples from all over New Zealand comprise the 73 patients at the home, which is controlled by the Auckland Hospital Board. Many of them are victims of the present polio outbreak.
By 1955, a vaccine was discovered for polio by Jonas Salk. Here is an uplifting broadcast from the time entitled Victory Over Polio, about what the polio vaccine meant for society. One day, this day will come for us too.
A year of anxiety and triumphs. A major medical hurdle was crossed with the discovery by Dr. Jonas Salk of the anti-polio vaccine, which was to spread a mantle of protection over millions of American children. And the scientist entered the ranks of the medical immortals. Leading drug firms shifted into high gear to meet a national demand, which spread to every crossroads despite early controversy. Each hastily set up center became a mecca for anxious parents shepherding little Johnny and little Jill to their inoculations. They're protected, and it didn't hurt a bit.
That was a 95 BFM podcast. Support 95 BFM with a B card. Go to 95bfm.com/signup.